In The Hair of Harold Rue, probably the best novel about writing ever published, Thomas Williams offers a striking metaphor, maybe even a parable, for how a story is born. He envisions a dark plain with a small fire burning on it. One by one, people come out of the dark to warm themselves. Each one brings a little fuel, and eventually the small fire becomes a blaze with the characters standing around it, their faces brightly lit, and each beautiful in its own way. One night as I lay drifting towards sleep, I saw a very small fire, a kerosene lantern, in fact, with a man trying to read a newspaper by its light. Other men came with their own lanterns, casting more light on a dreary landscape that turned out to be the Dakota Territory. I have visions like this frequently, although it makes me uneasy to admit it. I don't always tell the stories that go with them. Sometimes the fire goes out. This one had to be told because I knew exactly what kind of language I wanted to use, dry and laconic, not like my usual style at all. I had no idea where the story was going, but I felt perfectly confident that the language would take me there, and it did.
A Death, read by Cotter Smith.
Jim Truesdale had a shack on the west side of his father's gone-to-seed ranch, and that's where he was when Sheriff Barkley and half a dozen deputized townsmen found him, sitting in the one chair by the cold stove, wearing a dirty barn coat and reading an old issue of the Black Hills Pioneer by lantern light. Looking at it, anyway. Sheriff Barkley stood in the doorway, mostly filling it up. He was holding his own lantern. "Come out of there, Jim, and do it with your hands up. I ain't drawn my pistol and don't want to." Truesdale came out. He still had the newspaper in one of his raised hands. He stood there looking at the sheriff out of his flat gray eyes. The sheriff looked back. So did the others, four on horseback and two on the seat of an old buckboard with Hines Mortuary printed on the side in faded yellow letters. "I notice you ain't asked why we're here," Sheriff Barkley said. "Why are you here, Sheriff? Where's your hat, Jim?" Truesdale put the hand not holding the newspaper to his head, as if to feel for his hat, which was a flat brown plainsman and not there. "In your place, is it?" the sheriff asked. A cold breeze kicked up, blowing the horse's manes and flattening the grass in a wave that ran south. "No," Truesdale said, "I don't believe it is."
"Then where?"
"I might have lost it."
"You need to get in the back of the wagon," the sheriff said.
"I don't want to ride in no funeral hack," Truesdale said. "That's bad luck."
"You got bad luck all over," one of the men said. "You're painted in it. Get in."
Truesdale went to the back of the buckboard and climbed up. The breeze kicked again, harder, and he turned up the collar of his barn coat. The two men on the seat of the buckboard got down and stood either side of it. One drew his gun, the other did not. Truesdale knew their faces, but not their names. They were town men. The sheriff and the other four went into his shack. One of them was Hines the Undertaker. They were in there for some time. They even opened the stove, which was unlit in spite of the cold evening, and dug through the ashes. At last, they came out.
"No hat," Sheriff Barkley said.
"And we would have seen it. That's a damn big hat."
"Got anything to say about that?"
"It's too bad I lost it. My father gave it to me back when he was still right in the head."
"Where is it, then?"
"Told you I might have lost it, or had it stoled. That might have happened, too. Say, I was going to bed right soon."
"Never mind going to bed.
You were in town this afternoon, weren't you?"
"Sure he was," one of the men said, mounting up again. "I seen him myself wearing that hat, too."
"Shut up, Dave," Sheriff Barkley said. "Were you in town, Jim?"
"Yes, sir, I was," Truesdale said.
"In the Chuckaluck?"
"Yes, sir, I was. I walked from here and had two drinks, and then I walked home. I guess the Chuckaluck's where I lost my hat."
"That's your story." Truesdale looked up at the black November sky.
"It's the only story I got."
Look at me, son. Truesdale looked at him. That's your story.
Told you. The only one I got, Truesdale said, looking at him.
Sheriff Barkley sighed. All right, let's go to town.
Why?
Because you're arrested.
Ain't got a brain in his fucking head, one of the men remarked. Makes his daddy look smart.
They went back to town. It was 4 miles. Truesdale rode in the back of the mortuary wagon with the collar of his coat turned up. Without turning around, the man holding the reins said,
Did you rape her as well as steal her dollar, you hound?
I don't know what you're talking about, Truesdale said.
The rest of the trip went in silence, except for the wind. In town, people lined the street. At first, they were silent. Then an old woman in a brown shawl ran at the funeral hack in a sort of limping run and spit at Truesdale. She missed, but there was a spatter of applause. At the jail, Sheriff Barkley helped Truesdale down from the wagon. The wind was brisk now and smelled of snow. Tumbleweeds blew straight down the main street and toward the town water tower, where they piled up against a shake pole fence and rattled there.
Hang that baby killer,
a man shouted, and someone threw a rock. It went between Truesdale's head and right shoulder and clattered on the board sidewalk. Sheriff Barkley turned and held up his lantern and surveyed the crowd that had gathered in front of the mercantile. Don't do that, he said. Don't act foolish. This is in hand. The sheriff took Truesdale through his office, holding him by his upper arm and into the jail. There were two cells. Barkley led Truesdale into the one on the left. There was a bunk and a stool and a waste bucket. Truesdale made to sit down on the stool, and Barkley said, No, just stand there. The sheriff looked around and saw the posse men crowding into the doorway. You all get out of here, he said.
Otis, said Dave, what if he attacks you?
Then I will subdue him. I thank you for doing your duty, but now you need to scat. When they were gone, he said, Take off that coat and give it to me. Truesdale took off his barn coat and began shivering. Underneath, he was wearing nothing but an undershirt and corduroy pants so worn the wail was almost gone and one knee was out. Sheriff Barkley went through the pockets of the coat and found a twisted tobacco in a page of the J.W. Sears catalog, and an old lottery ticket promising a payoff in pesos. There was also a black marble.
That's my lucky marble, Truesdale said. I had it since I was a boy.
Turn out your pants pockets. Truesdale turned them out. He had a penny and 3 nickels and a folded-up news clipping about the Nevada silver rush that looked as old as the Mexican lottery ticket. Take off your boots. Truesdale took them off. Barkley took them and felt inside them. There was a hole in one sole the size of a dime. Now your stockings. Barkley turned them inside out and tossed them aside. Drop your pants.
I don't want to.
No more than I want to see what's in there, but drop them anyway. Truesdale dropped his pants. He wasn't wearing underdrawers. Turn around and spread your cheeks. Truesdale turned, grabbed his buttocks, and pulled them apart. Sheriff Barkley winced, sighed, and poked a finger into Truesdale's anus. Truesdale groaned. Barkley removed his finger, wincing again at the soft pop, and wiped his finger on Truesdale's undershirt. Where is it, Jim?
My hat?
You think I went up your ass looking for your hat? Or through the ashes in your stove? Are you being smart? Truesdale pulled up his trousers and buttoned them. Then he stood shivering and barefoot. Not long ago, he'd been at home reading his newspaper and thinking about starting a fire in the stove, but that seemed long ago. I've got your hat in my office.
Then why did you ask about it?
To see what you'd say. That hat is all settled. What I really want to know is where you put the girl's silver dollar. It's not in your house, or your pockets, or up your poop chute. Did you get feeling guilty and throw it away?
I don't know about no silver dollar. Can I have my hat back?
No, it's evidence. Jim Truesdale, I'm arresting you for the murder of Rebecca Klein. Do you have anything you want to say to that?
Yes, sir, that I don't know no Rebecca Klein.
The sheriff left the cell, closed the door, took a key from the wall, and locked it. The tumblers screeched as they turned. The cell mostly housed drunks and was rarely locked. He looked in at Truesdale and said, "I feel sorry for you, Jim. Hell ain't too hot for a man who'd do such a thing."
"What thing?"
The sheriff clumped away without any reply. Truesdale stayed in the cell for a week, eating grub from Mother's Best, sleeping on the bunk, shitting and pissing in the bucket, which was emptied every 2 days. His father didn't come to see him because his father had gone foolish in his 80s, and in his 90s was being cared for by a couple of squaws, one Sue and the other Lakota. Sometimes they stood on the porch of the deserted bunkhouse and sang hymns in harmony. His brother was in Nevada, hunting for silver. Sometimes children came and stood in the alley outside his cell chanting, "Hangman, hangman, come on down." Sometimes men stood out there and threatened to cut off his privates. Once, Rebecca Klein's mother came and said she would hang him herself were she allowed.
"How could you kill my baby?" she asked, through the barred window. "She was only 10 years old and 'twas her birthday." "Ma'am," Truesdale said, standing on the bunk so he could look down at her white, upturned face, "I didn't kill your baby, nor no one."
"Black liar," she said, and went away. Almost everyone in town attended the child's funeral. The squaws went. Even the two whores who plied their trade in the Chuckaluck went.
Truesdale heard the singing from his cell as he squatted over the bucket in the corner. Sheriff Barkley telegraphed Fort Pierre, and eventually the circuit riding judge came. He was newly appointed and young for the job, a dandy with long blonde hair down his back like Wild Bill Hickok. His name was Roger Mizell. He wore small round spectacles and in both the Chuckaluck and Mother's Best proved himself a man with an eye for the ladies, although he wore a wedding band. There was no lawyer in town to serve as Truesdale's defense, so Mizell called on George Andrews, owner of the Mercantile, the Hostelry, and the Good Rest Hotel. Andrews had gotten 2 years of higher education at a business school in Omaha. He said he would serve as Truesdale's attorney only if Mr. and Mrs. Klein agreed.
"Then go see him," Mizell said.
He was in the barber shop, tilted back in the chair and taking a shave.
"Don't let the grass grow under your feet."
"Well," Mr. Klein said after Andrews had stated his business, "I got a question. If he doesn't have someone to stand for him, can they still hang him?" "That would not be American justice," George Andrews said, "and although we are not one of the United States just yet, we will be soon."
"Can he wriggle out of it?" Mrs. Klein asked.
"No, ma'am," Andrews said. "I don't see how."
"Then do your duty, and God bless you," Mrs. Klein said.
The trial lasted through one November morning and halfway into the afternoon. It was held in the municipal hall, and on that day, there was snow flurries as fine as wedding lace. Slate-gray clouds rolling toward town threatened a bigger storm. Roger Mizell, who had familiarized himself with the case, served as prosecuting attorney as well as judge.
"Like a banker taking out a loan from himself and then paying himself interest,"
one of the jurors was overheard to say during the lunch break at Mother's Best, and although no one disagreed with this, no one suggested it was a bad idea. It had a certain economy, after all. Prosecutor Mizell called half a dozen witnesses, and Judge Mizell never objected once to his line of questioning. Mr. Klein testified first, and Sheriff Barkley came last. The story that emerged was a simple one. At noon on the day of Rebecca Klein's murder, there had been a birthday party with cake and ice cream. Several of Rebecca's friends attended. Around 2 o'clock, while the little girls were playing pin the tail on the donkey and musical chairs, Jim Truesdale entered the Chuckaluck and ordered a knock of whiskey. He was wearing his plainsman's hat. He made the drink last, and when it was gone, he ordered another. Did he at any point take off the hat? Perhaps hang it on one of the hooks by the door? No one could remember. "Only I never seen him without it," said Dale Gerard, the barman. "He was partial to that hat. If he did take it off, he probably laid it on the bar beside him. He had his second drink and then he left." "Was his hat on the bar when he left?" Mizell asked.
"No, sir."
Was it on one of the hooks when you closed up shop for the night?
No, sir.
Around 3 o'clock that day, Rebecca Klein left her house at the south end of town to visit the apothecary on Main Street. Her mother told her she could buy some candy with her birthday dollar, but not eat it because she'd had sweets enough for one day. When 5 o'clock came and she hadn't returned home, Mr. Klein and some other men searched for her. They found her in Barker's Alley between the Stage Depot and the Good Rest. She'd been strangled. Her silver dollar was gone. It was only when the grieving father took her in his arms that the men saw Truesdale's broad-brimmed leather hat. It had been hidden beneath the skirt of the girl's party dress. During the jury's lunch hour, hammering was heard from behind the Stage Depot and not 90 paces from the scene of the crime. This was the gallows going up. The work was supervised by the town's best carpenter, whose name, appropriately enough, was Mr. John House. Big snow was coming, and the road to Fort Pierre would be impassable, perhaps for a week, perhaps for the entire winter. There were no plans to jug Truesdale in the local calaboose till spring. There was no economy in that.
"Nothing to build in a gallows," House told folks who came to watch. "A child could build one of these."
He told how a lever-operated beam would run beneath the trap door, and how it would be axle-greased to make sure there wouldn't be any last-minute holdups.
"If you have to do a thing like this, you want to do it right the first time," House said.
In the afternoon, George Andrews put Truesdale on the stand. This occasioned some hissing from the spectators, which Judge Mizell gaveled down, promising to clear the courtroom if folks couldn't behave themselves.
"Did you enter the Chuckaluck Saloon on the day in question?" Andrews asked when order had been restored.
"I guess so," Truesdale said. "Otherwise I wouldn't be here." There was some laughter at that, which Mizell also gaveled down, although he was smiling himself and did not issue a second admonition.
"Did you order 2 drinks?
"Yes, sir, I did. 2 was all I had money for."
"But you got another dollar right quick, didn't you hound?" Abel Hines shouted.
Mizell pointed his gavel first at Hines, then at Sheriff Barkley, sitting in the front row.
"Sheriff, escort that man out and charge him with disorderly conduct, if you please."
Barkley escorted Hines out, but did not charge him with disorderly conduct.
He asked what had gotten into him instead. "I'm sorry, Otis," Hines said. "It was seeing him sitting there with his bare face hanging out."
"You go on down street and see if John House needs some help with his work," Barkley said. "Don't come back in here until this mess is over."
"He's got all the help he needs, and it's snowing hard now."
"You won't blow away. Go on." Meanwhile, Truesdale continued to testify. No, he hadn't left the Chuckaluck wearing his hat, but hadn't realized it until he got to his place. By then, he said, he was too tired to walk all the way back to town in search of it. Besides, it was dark. Mizell broke in. "Are you asking this court to believe you walked 4 miles without realizing you weren't wearing your damn hat?"
"I guess since I wear it all the time, I just figured it must be there," Truesdale said.
This elicited another gust of laughter. Barkley came back in and took his place next to Dave Fisher.
"What are they laughing at?"
"Tommy don't need a hangman," Fisher said. "He's tying the knot all by himself. I guess it shouldn't be funny, but it's pretty comical just the same."
"Did you encounter Rebecca Klein in that alley?" George Andrews asked in a loud voice.
With every eye on him, he had discovered a heretofore hidden flair for the dramatic.
"Did you encounter her and steal her birthday dollar?"
"No, sir,"
Truesdale said.
"Did you kill her?"
"No, sir. I didn't even know who she was."
Mr. Klein rose from his seat and shouted, "You lying son of a bitch!"
"I ain't lying," Truesdale said.
And that was when Sheriff Barkley believed him.
"I have no further questions," George Andrews said and walked back to his seat. Truesdale started to get up, but Mizell told him to sit still and answer a few more questions.
"Do you continue to contend, Mr. Truesdale, that someone stole your hat while you were drinking in the Chuckaluck, and that someone put it on and went into the alley and killed Rebecca Klein and left it there to implicate you?" Truesdale was silent.
"Answer the question, Mr. Truesdale." Sir, I don't know what implicate means. Do you expect us to believe someone framed you for this heinous murder?
Truesdale considered, twisting his hands together. At last he said,
Maybe. Somebody took it by mistake and throwed it away.
Mizell looked out at the rapt gallery.
Did anyone here take Mr. Truesdale's hat by mistake?
There was silence except for the wind. It was picking up. The snow was no longer flurries. The first big storm of winter had arrived. That was the one townsfolk called the wolf winter because the wolves came down from the Black Hills in packs to hunt for garbage.
I have no more questions, Mizell said, and due to the weather, we're going to dispense with any closing statements. The jury will retire to consider a verdict. You have three choices, gentlemen: innocent, manslaughter, or murder in the first degree.
Girl slaughter, more like it, someone remarked.
Sheriff Barkley and Dave Fisher retired to the Chuckaluck. Abel Hines joined them, brushing snow from the shoulders of his coat. Dale Girard served them schooners of beer on the house.
Mizell might not have had no more questions, Barkley said, but I got one. Never mind the hat. If Truesdale killed her, how come we never found that silver dollar?
Because he got scared and threw it away, Hines said.
I don't think so. He's too bones stupid. If he'd had that dollar, he'd have gone back to the Chuckaluck and drunk it up.
What are you saying? Dave asked. You think he's innocent?
I'm saying I wish we'd found that cartwheel.
Maybe he lost it out a hole in his pocket.
He didn't have any holes in his pockets, Barkley said. Only one in his boot, and it wasn't big enough for a silver dollar to get through. He drank some of his beer. The wind gusted, and tumbleweeds blew up Main Street looking like ghostly brains in the snow. The jury took an hour and a half.
We voted to hang him on the first ballot, Kelton Fisher said later, but we wanted it to look decent.
Mizell asked Truesdale if he had anything to say before sentence was passed.
I can't think of nothing, Truesdale said. Just, I never killed that girl.
The storm blew for 3 days. John House asked Barkley how much he reckoned Truesdale weighed, and Barkley said he guessed the man went around 140. House made a dummy out of burlap sacks and filled it with stones, weighing it on the hostelry scales until the needle stood pat on 140. Then he hung the dummy while half the town stood around in the snowdrifts and watched. The trial run went all right. On the night before the execution, the weather cleared. Sheriff Barkley told Truesdale he could have anything he wanted for dinner. Truesdale asked for steak and eggs, with home fries on the side soaked in gravy. Barkley bought it out of his own pocket and sat at his desk cleaning his fingernails and listening to the steady clink of Truesdale's knife and fork on the china plate. When it stopped, he went in. Truesdale was sitting on his bunk. His plate was so clean, Barkley figured he must have lapped up the last of the gravy like a dog. He was crying.
Something just come to me, Truesdale said.
What's that, Jim?
If they hang me tomorrow morning, I'll go into my grave with steak and eggs still in my belly. It won't have no chance to work through.
For a moment, Barkley said nothing. He was horrified, not by the image, but because Truesdale had thought of it. And then he said, Wipe your nose. Truesdale wiped it.
Now listen to me, Jim, because this is your last chance. You were in that bar in the middle of the afternoon. Not many people in there then. Isn't that right?
I guess it is.
Then who took your hat? Close your eyes. Think back. See it.
Truesdale closed his eyes. Barkley waited. At last, Truesdale opened his eyes, which were red from crying.
I can't even remember was I wearing it.
Barkley sighed. Give me your plate, and mind that knife. Truesdale handed the plate through the bars with the knife and fork laid on it and said he wished he could have some beer. Barkley thought it over, then put on his heavy coat and Stetson and walked down to the Chuckaluck, where he got a small pail of beer from Dale Girard. Undertaker Hines was just finishing a glass of wine. He followed Barkley out into the wind and cold.
Big day tomorrow, Barkley said. There hadn't been a hanging here in 10 years. And with luck, there won't be another for 10 more. I'll be gone out of the job by then. I wish I was now.
Hines looked at him.
You really don't think he killed her?
If he didn't, Barkley said, whoever did is still walking around. The hanging was at 9 o'clock the next morning. The day was windy and bitterly cold, but most of the town turned out to watch. Pastor Ray Rowell stood on the scaffold next to John House. Both of them were shivering in spite of their coats and scarves. The pages of Pastor Rouse's Bible fluttered. Tucked into House's belt, also fluttering, was a hood of homespun cloth dyed black. Barkley led Truesdale, his hands cuffed behind his back, to the gallows. Truesdale was all right until he got to the steps. Then he began to buck and cry.
"Don't do this," he said. "Please don't do this to me. Please don't hurt me. Please don't kill me."
He was strong for a little man, and Barkley motioned Dave Fisher to come and lend a hand. Together they muscled Truesdale, twisting and ducking and pushing, up the 12 wooden steps. Once he bucked so hard, all three of them almost fell off, and arms reached up to catch them if they did.
"Quit that and die like a man," someone shouted.
When they reached the platform, Truesdale was momentarily quiet. But when Pastor Rouse commenced Psalm 51, he began to scream.
"Like a woman with her tit caught in the wringer," someone said later in the chuckaluck.
"Have mercy on me, O God, after thy great goodness," Rouse read, raising his voice to be heard over the condemned man's shrieks to be let off. "According to the multitude of thy mercies, do away with mine offenses." When Truesdale saw House take the black hood out of his belt, he began to pant like a dog. He shook his head from side to side, trying to dodge the hood. His hair flew. House followed each jerk patiently, like a man who means to bridle a skittish horse.
"Let me look at the mountains," Truesdale bellowed.
Runners of snot hung from his nostrils.
"I'll be good if you let me look at the mountains one more time."
But House only jammed the hood over Truesdale's head and pulled it down to his shaking shoulders. Pastor Rouse was droning on, and Truesdale tried to run off the trap door. Barkley and Dave Fisher pushed him back onto it. Down below, someone cried, "Ride 'em, cowboy!" "Say amen," Barkley told Pastor Rouse. "For Christ's sake, say amen."
"Amen,"
Pastor Rouse said, and stepped back, closing his Bible with a clap. Barkley nodded to House. House pulled the lever. The greased beam retracted and the trap dropped. So did Truesdale. There was a crack when his neck broke. His legs drew up almost to his chin, then fell back limp. Yellow drops stained the snow under his feet.
"There, you bastard!" Rebecca Klein's father shouted. "Died pissing like a dog on a fire plug. Welcome to hell!"
A few people clapped. The spectators stayed until Truesdale's corpse, still wearing the black hood, was laid in the same hurry-up wagon he'd ridden to town in. Then they dispersed. Barkley went back to the jail and sat in the cell Truesdale had occupied. He sat there for 10 minutes. It was cold enough to see his breath. He knew what he was waiting for, and eventually it came. He picked up the small bucket that had held Truesdale's last drink of beer and vomited. Then he went into his office and stoked up the stove. He was still there 8 hours later trying to read a book when Abel Hines came in. He said, "You need to come down to the funeral parlor, Otis. There's something I want to show you."
"What?"
"No, you'll want to see it for yourself." They walked down to the Hines funeral parlor and mortuary. In the back room, Truesdale lay naked on a cooling board. There was a smell of chemicals and shit.
"They load their pants when they die that way," Hines said. "Even men who go to it with their heads up, they can't help it.
The sphincter lets go."
"And?" "Step over here.
I figure a man in your job has seen worse than a pair of shitty drawers." They lay on the floor, mostly turned inside out. Something gleamed in the mess. Barkley leaned closer and saw it was a silver dollar. He reached down and plucked it out of the crap.
"I don't understand it," Hines said. son of a bitch, was locked up almost a month.
There was a chair in the corner. Barclay sat down in it so heavily he made a little woof sound. He must have swallowed it the first time when he saw our lanterns coming. And every time it came out, he cleaned it off and swallowed it again. The two men stared at each other.
You believed them, Hines said at last.
Fool that I am, I did.
Maybe that says more about you than it does about him.
He went on saying he was innocent right to the end. He'll most likely stand at the throne of God saying the same thing.
Yes, Hines said.
I don't understand. He was gonna hang. Either way, he was gonna hang. Do you understand it?
I don't even understand why the sun comes up. What are you gonna do with that cartwheel? Give it back to the girl's mother and father? Might be better if you didn't, because... Hines shrugged.
Because the Kleins knew all along. Everyone in town knew all along. He was the only one that hadn't known. Fool that he was.
I don't know what I'm going to do with it, he said.
The wind gusted, bringing the sound of singing. It was coming from the church. It was the doxology.
Thinking of Elmore Leonard.